M8, number 2B.
All right. So you would start, as I said, putting the problem behind you, turn to mind, and see that mind knows only men as idea. What does it mean? Others would stop there and say, mind, God only knows men as idea. But what idea? What is idea? See, he went always a step further. So he would fill his consciousness with mind and see, therefore, mind is idea. Idea of what? The idea action, the idea power, the idea intelligence, the idea creative ability. He would see that man is idea, idea that is guided and led, idea that is acting under the impulsion, creative impulsion of a definite law of mind. He is under the influence of that one mind, and therefore man as the idea of mind is only influenced by that one helping, saving, guiding mind. And so he builds up that whole concept of man as idea and sees him as the idea of intelligence, that intelligence acts according to law, and so he sees that he is acting and living constantly in the realm of creative activity, where nothing can go amiss. And he will go on and see man as idea of spirit. Just see again the man as idea of spirit, therefore man to him in that treatment is the idea of spiritual substance. Man is therefore an entity that is completely spiritual, is not mixed up with any matter, with nothing that is foreign to the purity of spirit. He sees man as idea, as being only spiritual, and therefore bringing forth only spiritual fruits. Therefore he is never at the point of frustration. He is always at the point of giving birth to true development, to new unfoldment, to new progress. He sees man as that blossoming, really, of eternal evolution, constantly giving birth to itself. He sees man as idea to be the real man, the only man, that there is no other man but this spiritual idea of man. And so he is never corporeal. He gets a sense of man as the idea of soul. So we think in the term around soul, what man as the idea of soul is. And if we begin to see, my word, that man as idea is really defined by soul, and soul can only define him with a blessed name. There is no diseased name on him. He is only the blessed one. He is that representative of soul. He is not the representative of anything else that is false, that is not true, that is disease. He is representative of that sinlessness of soul. Nothing ails him. Nothing can touch him. He is the idea of absolute spiritual changelessness. He cannot change. He cannot lose his health. He cannot lose his substance. He cannot lose his mind. He cannot lose anything that is spiritual, that is good, and that is true. So there is no loss in that idea, man. And you can go on that man is within himself, happy, satisfied, joyous. There is no depression in man. Nothing can burden that man. His yoke is light because he can see in the freedom of soul there is no limitation. He lives and moves and has its being in the unlimited realm of his infinite capacity of soul. And you just feel the infinite capacity of that man which entertains and embraces all the faculties of spirit, all the faculties of mind. They are all within the capacity of that one representative of soul. And I feel there can nothing be wrong with that. And so you go on to men as the idea of principle, and you entertain men as the idea of principle, and you just see, as the idea of principle is the idea of system. What means system? It means that all details are closely knit together intelligently and creatively into one whole. Every part of his system is touched by that one principle. And one begins to see that that idea system, therefore, is reaching out to every part of his body, of his human system, of even of his organic system. No part in the whole world is not touched by the ever-working, ever-operative, absolute, apodictical, imperative command and government of that one principle that is harmony, that establishes harmony. And I have a feeling, well, if every part of man, of the idea of man, is touched by this infinite principle, by this infinite principle of harmony, there can be no discord in his own life. No discord in his family, no discord in his surrounding, no discord in the body, no discord family-wise, financially-wise, no discord in any way and shape and mean. And so I feel that that whole system which he has must be a frictionless system, a system that works together in a frictionless way and therefore cannot hurt anything, cannot irritate anything, cannot inflame anything. And you get just the sense of the rhythm of that principle which flows easily, coherently, working together just for one good. And so you establish a sense of man as the idea of system and of science. You can go to life, and in the quietude of one's thought, where everything is quiet, where one doesn't have to talk to a whole class, where one is not distracted from a class, you know, the spirit just comes and talks to you and tells you the most beautiful thing about life, that man is not just the man in which life lives, is the idea life, is the idea of infinite individuality, infinite inseparability. Therefore, man is always bound to its principle, and therefore has always all the principle also has. And you get an enormous sense of the richness of man, the fullness of man, that infinite provision that man has, the infinite supply and maintenance that man has, is infinitely provided for. Because through the infinite individuality, he just gets anything and everything, and he gets it more than plenty, more than he can take, because from life pours forth more than what we can accept, and we get the terrific sense of the fullness of life, the origin of life, the source of life, the well of life, just bringing forth and forth and forth and forth and forth without asking, are you grateful, are you not grateful, do you say thanks or not thanks, just that one life just pours in a way of infinite grace, everything as a gift of grace upon man, does not even ask if the patient is grateful for it, if he merits it, if he really should be blessed by it. Just like rain rains on the farmer that is a good farmer and the bad farmer, the infinitude of fullness of life just doesn't ask. It's absolutely impersonal and doesn't ask if it's worthwhile or not. It just pours and pours and pours and pours out the richness of being, more than what we accept. And that gives a tremendous sense of the eternality of life, the flow of life, the floods of life, flooding our whole life with infinite opportunities, with infinite situations, with infinite faculties. Everything is at our disposition. Nothing is lacking. Nothing is withheld by life. It just pours and pours and pours. It's only a matter of accepting it. And I see man as idea accepts it. Accepts that infinitude of fullness and abundance of life. And I feel, therefore, whatever seems to be wrong is just one big lie, because that lie has no beginning, no end, because right from ever from time immemorial, that flood of life was flooding and flooding with abundance that whole life. Nothing can stop it. It's the irrepressible sense of life, that irrepressible power of life that against any opposition breaks through. Life is that breakthrougher, if you may call it that way, that breakthrough no matter what kind of opposition is put up against life. And so that poor patient has no chance whatever than to give in, because the irresistible power of life just knocks everything down that stands in the way, because man as idea is accepting the infinite power of life as an irresistible, irrepressible sense of life. And so life must blossom wherever it is, even on the ashes of a decayed sense of being. It always blooms afresh. It always grows afresh. Even out of the ruins, life will grow. No matter how bad that situation looks humanly, no matter how those ruins look like humanly, there is still a remnant, and that can grow and can blossom. That's what my man as idea is, that he always blossoms. There is always newness of life there, and any moment the fullness of life just pours down on him. Then you can go to truth, and you can see truth, and see that man is the idea of truth. Wonderful. So it's not a situation, a proposition of sickness, of decay. It's always at the point of perfection, of health, of wholeness. He has always, man has always the form of the stature of the manhood of Christ. Man is always the Christ. He's always the Christ idea. He's always that which can save, and therefore is the Savior of the world. And so I begin to see that man, therefore, as the Christ, has the Christ consciousness. And that Christ conscious is only conscious of everything that is true and right, only that which is constructive, affirmative. I see, therefore, that that consciousness is a divine consciousness which can never know anything that is disease. He is not aware of disease, can never know that he feels that he is diseased. And so I free that man from a sense of believing in a belief. And in this way, man becomes a free man that has dominion. And I feel man is the idea of dominion. He has always dominion over any situation, and nothing can surprise him. He cannot be taken by surprise. He cannot be sidetracked and tempted by anything, because he has dominion, the dominion of truth, is aware of his truth dominion, is aware of his inheritance that he has, is aware that he is the heir of all, and knows that he knows what he has. And he affirms that what he has. And what he has is always the whole truth, the ideal truth. Nothing is lacking there. And so thought may go to love and see that man is the idea of love. Therefore, as the idea of love, man is always at the point of fulfillment. It's the idea of fulfillment. He cannot help to be fulfilled. It's the idea of perfection. Nothing is missing. It's the idea of plan. Therefore, he lives and moves in an infinite plan, so that the purpose of his life is brought out. He cannot miss his mission. He cannot miss salvation. Man is at the point of being saved, and therefore he is the comforter. So I begin to see more and more about man as the idea of love, that he is really taken care of by infinite love, that love embraces man, cares for man, that protects man, It's the shield and the panoply of love that protects him from anything, no evil whatsoever can come nigh to men. He's absolutely at the point where he is expressing all ideas, where all error is absolutely finally compensated in the law of love. And so I feel nothing is wrong with the idea of man. So you build up your consciousness about men as the idea of the seven synonymous terms. And we get the full sense of it, and a whole sense of it, a saving sense of it, and it just should stay there. The practical consequence really is that in this meditation, in this pondering, in this contemplation of the true idea, man, we have to be sure about what we are knowing. We have to be confident about what we are knowing. And we should be persistent and perseverant in what we are knowing. We should not be sidetracked by visible contrary evidence, by the sense testimony to the opposite. As we have seen, it can even be that the case gets worse and worse, but it is perhaps a chemicalization, a crisis, and we know this is a good sign, a sign that shows that the Christ idea is working and is forcing its claim upon mortals. And if they don't like to give it up quickly, they chemicalize, and this is only a transitionary period. Finally, when we stick to the truth, like Paul was sticking to his truth, then he will win a victory, and so will we. So it's absolutely necessary to be firm in one's treatment, in one's vision, and not have a vision that one doubts oneself, where one is not sure, did I give a right treatment? Was that treatment good enough? Whatever the inspiration of the seven synonymous terms tell you every day is an inspiration of God, and therefore you can trust it fully and rely on it. So at that point, Mr. Dolick would say, if you do that, then either one of two things happen. Either the patient gets well through that treatment, or he doesn't get well. If he doesn't get well, he says, well, it's just a matter that you are more devoted, more consecrated. And then he says, just as Mrs. Edis sometimes says, then, that divine idea, through the law of opposite, will uncover the error that needs to be destroyed. So you see, it can be translated to the point of concrete error, so that, say, in this treatment, perhaps, where the human testimony, say, was, let's say, tuberculosis, and the human testimony says, this is tuberculosis, it is a hereditary belief, say. The father had it already, and so there are bacteria, and you get an infection of it, and so you were out, 1 out of 10,000 who got it, and so you have it, and therefore you have this tuberculosis. This is the mortal mind reading. The divine mind reading in that case may tell us something completely different about the tuberculosis. That would be revealed in the treatment. Let's say that we don't listen to the patient, that we listen to divine mind, and that divine mind may tell us, perhaps, let's say, he tell us, you know, that person suffers under a broken heart. suffers on the broken heart. That person had had a broken heart because boyfriend left her, something like that, and she couldn't overcome it, can tell us something completely different than what Mortal Minds tells us. And actually, in most cases, it's something like this, because everybody has tuberculosis one time, but we all work it out when we are healthy. Everybody, according to medical belief, everybody gets tuberculosis one time or the other in their life. But when the body is healthy, they work it out. We work it out without that we notice it. But if we are psychologically not strong, it gets us. So what would we do? Say something that divine mind tells us, look here, that person, that patient suffers on the broken heart and not on the hereditary law. See? So you can't say this is a case of hereditary disease. No, then it is something else. And so you take up the specific idea, say, of broken heart. And what can you do with that? How can you deal with a broken heart? You can see, and then you can see that you take this specific error and look at it from the seven synonymous terms. That's as easy as that. Then you can start again, you see, on that specific point and see what does mind know about the broken heart. And mind says, I don't know anything about the broken heart because in the law of mind there is no breakage. There is only one thing going on, namely that the creative mind is always building up something creatively. Therefore, a spirit can only create something good, only something that is progressive, and therefore that situation is only there for a progressive step. Only the good comes to that patient. And you begin to see the goodness of spirit, the onlyness of spirit, you begin to realize that's a big lie, that any other belief could touch that patient because only good comes to it. And that's the only reality, and that reality is something that unfolds that person, does not drag it back. There is no retrogression in health, but going forward, and therefore, for that very reason, that the patient is making a great progress out of that whole situation. And you can look at it from the point of view of soul and see that soul is always satisfied. There is no dissatisfied state of mortal mind. There is no broken heart and sadness and being unhappy and so on. But the happiness and the joy of soul is his true nature. And you come to principle and you begin to see in principle and idea is always one. They cannot be separate. There is therefore no breakage between the relationship of principle and idea. Therefore, a broken human relationship has no power, has no effect on men. A broken human relationship is just nothing. It's just an illusion, because the only relationship that really matters is one's relationship to principle. And so we begin to see the beauty of that relationship with principle, that is always there and is always building up new and higher structure and a better life. And I come to life and I see that broken heart is actually nothing else than a counterfeit of a new life that begins, of being freed from a false relationship. We should be happy that false relationship is broken, because if it isn't good and if it's human and therefore is anyway based on something that is personal, so let's get over it and let's get free of it and see that there is a freedom that breaks in, and therefore that life begins to blossom anew and anew, and that we have now built on the true relationship, which can never be broken, on our relationship and foundation of principle. And so life just makes the best of it, and finally we come out into true life and get out of mortal life. And so I begin to feel that whole body must just be penetrated and infiltrated with life and the newness of life, so that every pore of that body just breaks out in joy and in life and in newness of life, and begins to work and to live and to move and have its being in life and the eternal life, in the abundance of life. And that's the truth about man and about the patient. That's the true idea of man, the dominion of man, and that's that, and that is the plan of life. And not the plan of life was behind it, and nothing else was behind it, not the devil was behind it, nothing destructive was behind it. The plan of love was behind it, and I begin to be happy about that this happened that way it happened. That helps the patient. Can you see, now I have specifically handled the belief of being broken-hearted, see, through the seven synonymous terms. Can you see what you do? Sometimes you first have to establish in an absolute, general, collective way first, what is the idea of man? And then sometimes that brings up the counterfeit belief that was at work. And as it brings that counterfeit belief up to the surface, then you have a wonderful possibility to take that error and look at it from all the seven synonymous terms. And that's the fact about the specific belief. And in this way, John Dolly would say, then you can see really that the truth is superior and is working in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. It's not only working in the realm of truth, but also is omnipotent also in the realm of belief. Because there is only one, the realm of the truth. Yes. So that was his way of teaching us an order of treatment.